Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So, you know, if you fracture your arm, the diagnostic process is, well, it's essentially a solved problem in medicine. The x-ray shows this jagged white line, and the doctor just points and says, there it is, it's binary. Broken or not broken.
Right, yeah, it's very clean.
Exactly, it's clean. And honestly, if you're the patient sitting in that room, that kind of mechanical certainty is, you know, comforting.
Oh, it is comforting. I mean, we are really drawn to things that are visible and perfectly categorized. Mm-hmm. But when you step into the world of oncology, specifically acute myeloid leukemia, or AML, that comforting diagnostic certainty just evaporates.
Yeah, it gets murky fast.
Incredibly murky. You're suddenly looking at a landscape that is, well, chaotic. AML is a devastating disease. It's aggressive, moving rapidly through the bone marrow and blood, and it carries very high morbidity and mortality. But the real villain making it so deadly is disease heterogeneity.
Right. Decades of research have shown us that leukemic stem cells are elusive and, you know, constantly evolving.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you can have two patients with what looks like the exact same type of leukemia under a microscope, but their bodies will respond to the same chemotherapy regimen in completely different ways. And currently, the medical community relies heavily on reading the DNA sequence, looking for specific genetic lesions or mutations to classify the disease.
Yeah, reading the raw text, basically.
But what happens when the literal text of the DNA looks somewhat normal, or at least ambiguous, yet the disease acting out in the patient's body is fiercely aggressive? I mean, we hit a wall.
Which is why we have to fundamentally rethink what we are looking at. What really happens when we stop just reading the genetic instructions and start looking at the chemical highlighters drawn all over them?
Oh, wow. I love that analogy.
Right. We are moving beyond just the raw sequence of the genome and stepping into a radically different layer of biology. The epigenome.
And mapping the sheer complexity of how leukemic cells use the epigenome to survive, I mean, that is a monumental task. Today, we celebrate the work of Francisco Marchi, Jitinder K. Lamba, and their vast network of collaborating institutions who have advanced our understanding of epigenomic diagnosis and prognosis in acute myeloid leukemia.
Yeah, this is a massive international effort. It spans the University of Florida, MIT, Uppsala University, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and many others.
It's a huge collaboration.
It really is. And for listeners following along, this deep dive covers the open access article titled Epigenomic Diagnosis and Prognosis of Acute Myeloid Leukemia. It was published online on July 29, 2025 in a Nature Portfolio Journal. And the DOI is 10.1038/CEPHO1467025-62054.
Perfect. So if you're a clinician listening to this, you know the dread of seeing something like complex karyotype on a patient's chart.
Oh, absolutely.
It basically means the chromosomes are a mess, but it doesn't give you a precise target to hit. We've known for a while that DNA methylation, which is a primary mechanism of the epigenome, drives the proliferation of AML. But for those who might not spend their days thinking about molecular biology, let's unpack this. It's like trying to understand a complex novel by only looking at the letters, while completely ignoring the bold text, the italics, and the red warning stamps. I mean, we're missing the context.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. What's fascinating here is that we already know epigenomic integrity is compromised in both young and old AML patients. I mean, the World Health Organization actually recommends molecular classification over mere cell shape or morphology.
But hospitals haven't actually been doing this, have they?
No, because they haven't had a feasible way to actually do this at the bedside. The technology to measure hundreds of thousands of microscopic methylation roadblocks practically hasn't existed.
Especially not in a time frame that actually helps a rapidly declining patient.
Exactly, and that is the exact problem this research team set out to solve. They didn't just publish a paper saying, you know, the epigenome is important. They built a massive diagnostic engine called the Acute Leukemia Methylome Atlas, or ALMA.
ALMA, okay.
Yeah, LMA is a triumph of data harmonization. They gathered 3,314 patient samples from 11 different clinical trials.
Wow, that's a huge data set.
It is. And for every single one of those samples, they looked at 331,556 specific CpG methylation sites.
Wait, hold on. I need to push back on that for a second.
Sure.
So they took 330,000 data points from thousands of patients. Isn't that an overwhelming amount of data? I mean, how do you compress that without losing the most critical biological signals?
That data overload is exactly why epigenomics has been stranded in the research lab and kept out of the clinic. The data is just too vast for human curation. So they use a machine learning algorithm called PacMap.
PacMap, and what does that do?
It's an unsupervised dimension reduction algorithm. It compresses those 330,000 data points into just 5 dimensions for classification.
Okay, 5 dimensions. How does that actually work mathematically?
Well, it calculates the relationships between all those data points. It ensures that if 2 patients have highly similar overall epigenomes in the 330,000 dimension space, they will remain tightly clustered together in the new 5-dimensional space. It basically preserves the topology.
So you keep the similar patients clumped together, and then you have to figure out what those clumps actually mean.
Precisely. Once they had those 5-dimensional coordinates, they fed them into a supervised machine learning algorithm called LightGBM. It detects patterns invisible to human curation and draws borders around those clusters, learning exactly where the boundaries are between different leukemia subtypes.
But the software is only half the battle, right? The physical implementation of this, getting the data out of the patient's body to feed the software, that's where the real magic happens.
Oh, absolutely.
They developed a specimen-to-result protocol using long-read nanopore sequencing, and the mechanics of this are just mind-blowing. They take just 200 microliters of blood or bone marrow.
Which is tiny.
Yeah. That's less than a tenth of a teaspoon. And they use nanopore sequencing to natively read the 5-millisie methylation and the genome simultaneously.
In one pass.
Exactly. Because different DNA bases have different physical sizes, they disrupt the electrical current in the nanopore in unique ways. And a methylated cytosine is physically fatter than an unmethylated one, so it blocks more of the ionic current.
Right, creating a completely distinct electrical disruption.
So
without needing any harsh chemical treatments, the machine reads both the genetic alphabet and the epigenomic highlighters at the exact same time.
And the most critical part, they do this in about 48 hours.
Which is revolutionary.
Yeah, when a patient is crashing from aggressive leukemia, you don't have 3 weeks to wait for a centralized lab. You need actionable intelligence immediately. So the software is trained, the sequencer is running. Let's look at what the LMA subtype model actually produced.
The diagnostic power was remarkable. LMA subtype accurately predicted 27 different WHO 2022 subtypes.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. In their discovery cohort, there were 840 patient samples where the standard clinical test basically shrugged. The clinical annotations were frustratingly ambiguous, labels like normal karyotype.
Basically saying, we aren't sure.
Right, and this algorithm was able to confidently place those 840 unknown patients into specific diagnostic categories based on their epigenomic signatures. That is a game changer for treatment.
It really is. And there was an unexpected insight in how they trained the model, actually, including data from non-AML samples, like acute lymphoblastic leukemia, mild dysplastic syndromes, and even normal controls that actually made the machine learning classifier better at predicting specific AML subtypes.
Wait, why would cluttering the data with other diseases make it better?
Because machine learning fundamentally operates by defining boundaries. You have to teach it what a specific AML subtype is not. By feeding it data from completely different blood disorders and healthy controls, the model learned to draw razor-sharp borders around the diverse AML subtypes.
That makes total sense. So the algorithm finally gives a definitive name to the disease for those 840 unknown patients. But does putting a name to it actually change their odds of survival? I mean, defining the disease is step one. Predicting the future of the disease is step two.
That brings us to their prognostic tool, the AML Epigenomic Risk Model. And the predictive power they achieved here is sobering. It accurately predicted 5-year overall survival.
What did the numbers look like for the high-risk patients?
High-risk patients in the discovery cohort had a hazard ratio of 4.4 to year-for mortality.
Let's break that down. A hazard ratio of 4.4 means that at any given moment during that 5-year period, a patient in the high-risk group was over 4 times more likely to pass away than someone in the low-risk group.
Yes, that is a massive divergence in survival trajectories. And what makes that number even more clinically powerful is that the epigenomic risk was an independent predictor.
Meaning it works even when standard clinical markers are telling a different story.
Exactly. It remains significant even when adjusting for standard clinical markers like age and minimal residual disease or MRD1.
Wait, so even with a negative MRD1?
Yeah. In the clinic, if a patient's MRD1 comes back negative, it means the microscope can't find any visible leukemic cells. It looks like a massive success. But the AML epigenomic risk model could look at patients who had a negative MRD1 and still identify which of them had high-risk epigenomes hiding underneath, primed for relapse.
Wow. So even when the standard tests give the all clear, the epigenome is waving a red flag, did they validate this outside of the historical data sets, like in a real hospital?
They did. Testing on 20 actual hospital patients confirmed high concordance with standard of care genomic variants. They ran a 48-hour nanopore protocol from scratch, and the epigenomic signatures predicted by the model matched what the hospital's pathology lab found.
So if you're the clinician deciding on the next phase of treatment, what does this mean practically? We are moving from a system of educated guesses to precise 48-hour molecular blueprints.
It's a complete shift. Patients currently placed in ambiguous standard risk groups could be correctly identified as high risk.
And that qualifies them for earlier bone marrow transplants or closer follow-up.
Right. It moves the entire clinical approach from being reactive to being proactive.
But let's look at the logistics. Whole genome nanopore sequencing requires computational power and expertise. If this is going to actually save lives globally, it can't just be locked inside massive research hospitals.
The researchers understood that limitation perfectly. To democratize the science, they created a targeted 38 CPG panel.
Oh, just 38 sites.
Yeah. By measuring just 38 specific methylation sites out of the 330,000, they were able to achieve a highly similar predictive capacity for 5-year survival.
That is huge. A 38-site panel is something smaller clinics could realistically run without needing whole genome sequencing. Okay, let's pause the Victory Lab for a second, because we have to talk about the blind spots. Mm. An AI algorithm is fundamentally a reflection of the data it consumes. So what does this all mean when the algorithm encounters something incredibly rare? If it hasn't seen enough training data for a specific, uniquely rare karyotype, doesn't it run the risk of misclassifying the patient?
This raises an important question about generalizability, and it's a limitation the authors are very transparent about. The model did struggle significantly with ultra-rare subtypes, like Down syndrome-associated AML, or rare genomic fusions like FUS.ERG.
Because it didn't have enough examples of those specific fusions to draw a dedicated boundary for them.
Exactly. The misclassifications precisely highlight the urgent need for larger, publicly available datasets representing rare patient populations. Mm. Biology is vast, and our training data must catch up to ensure rare variants aren't dangerously miscategorized.
Which is why the team released the models in an open source Python package called Alma Classifier, right?
Yes. It's a living tool. Mm-hmm. As more hospitals sequence their rare cases and feed that data back into the open source model, the algorithm will dynamically learn and sharpen those boundaries.
So let's bring it all together. For decades, we have been trying to read the book of leukemia by only looking at the letters. By leveraging machine learning and nanopore sequencing, the Acute Leukemia Methylome Atlas proves that the epigenome can rapidly and accurately classify AML subtypes and predict 5-year patient survival.
With striking independence from traditional clinical markers, yes.
Most importantly, it takes complex molecular diagnosis out of the theoretical realm and puts it directly into a 48-hour clinical reality. It leaves you with a staggering thought. What does this mean for the future of personalized oncology, and how long will it be before your epigenome is as routinely checked as your blood pressure?
That is the big question.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
Monitors glow, a whisper in the code where the hidden marks grow. Mythal lines like constellations on a blood dark page, telling us the subtype, turning fear into a stage. One drop, one run, let the long reads fly. Patterns in the silence where the old tests lie. If the map is faithful, we can choose the road before the clock decides what tomorrow is old. 38 lights in the circuitry of time, turning risk into rhythm, turning loss into sign. Name it, place it, break the
the blur apart, read the future softly from the methylated heart. We learn how to survive. Hold the data close, let the answer start. Read the future clearly from the